investors very nervously watching to see what's going to happen in Washington, D.C. Will we get a coronavirus stimulus package? I'm here to tell you, you know what? It's happening. These are politicians. Do not forget. Hi, everyone. I am Trish Regan. You're listening to Trish Intel, where we look at all the news that's happening all over the world to figure out what it means for your investments. A lot of political news that one needs to decipher these days. And the one thing that investors really should realize, fundamentally, is that while Washington often fails us, we know they do, when it really comes down to the wire, when push comes to shove and they're up against an election, well, guess what? They're going to do whatever they can to, buy votes. And by votes, we may soon see with this stimulus package that could result in another $600 a week for Americans until possibly the end of the year. Now, there are long-term consequences associated with that, and I don't want to ignore that. In fact, I'm someone who actually fears that we are spending way too much money between the Fed, between what we're seeing out of Washington. The monetary and fiscal combination is in many ways extremely irresponsible and will come back to bite us down the road. But that's down the road. And as an investor, you're thinking about, what does this mean for me now? How do I make this work for my money? And what you'll find is that the stimulus is going to be beneficial to the economy in the very near term. Consequently, one could expect that the market will still strengthen in this environment. You know, you've got people from BlackRock now, I should say BlackRock Investments, suggesting that perhaps, you know, it's not going to happen. BlackRock Investment Services writing to clients, and I quote here, "We see U.S. stocks at risk of fading fiscal stimulus, U.S. employment very much in focus this week." Okay. So they're right in that U.S. employment is very much in focus this week. We're going to get the jobs report. But what they're wrong on is the fading fiscal stimulus, because it's not fading in any way, shape, or form. My goodness, we have heard from the president himself, who has made it very, very clear that he wants the stimulus to continue. And we've heard from numerous Democrats that also want the stimulus to continue. Now, where they're throwing you a curveball these days is in their bickering, right? Which is to be expected. And there's a constant back and forth. The Democrats want to junk this up with everything from basically reinstituting the deduction for SALT purposes, the state and local income tax that benefits a lot of blue states and particularly benefits extremely wealthy individuals in a lot of these blue states. They want to put that one in there. And they also want to free up the banking system, less regulation when it comes to the marijuana industry, because apparently, somehow that's just essential, right, during a pandemic. At least Nancy Pelosi would tell you that. Meanwhile, the Republicans are no better. I mean, for goodness sakes, they've got everything from Pentagon spending to the location of the FBI in there. And what I would just say to all of them, right, all of them right now is time and place, guys, time and place. This is not the time to be working on marijuana legislation when, in fact, you want to get the $600 a week out to individuals to prevent them from really being up against it in this environment. Meanwhile, let me get back to the long-term consequences of this thing. There are serious effects that we should be considering. I mean, you consider the University of Chicago report out that came out recently saying that 68% of jobless workers would actually make more money under this whole coronavirus bill stimulus package than if they were actually working. So what are we doing here? Why are our incentives not aligned? I mean, shouldn't we be doing everything we can to get people back to work? That's, again, you know, getting at the root of the issue, which is the long-term problem. And you could say, okay, well, if you're young and healthy and you're not at risk of getting COVID-19, then maybe you ought to be participating in the workforce again. And we may run into a challenge in that people will say, hey, you know, why should I? And by the way, don't fault them for that. Americans are smart. We get it. If you can make anywhere from 70% to 100% to 150% of what you were otherwise making by staying home, well, that's a pretty good deal, right? And even for the people that say maybe would make the 70% by going back into the workforce, they have to consider all the other factors. Daycare, for example, or the cost of gas, The wear and tear of getting to and from work. And well, believe me, I'm all for work. And I think that it's really intrinsic to who we are and part of what motivates all of us. It's a very healthy thing. People are going to make logical decisions in terms of what's best for their family. And so sometimes this is where government kind of gets in the way. It sort of screws things up, right? Because it has theoretically good intentions, and yet somehow they get corrupted. Those good intentions wind up having negative effects. However, back to investing, because that's what you care about. And bottom line, they'll get it done. You got the jobs report on Friday, right? If that comes in very poor, there's going to be all the more pressure being put on these lawmakers to figure it out and to do something. And so I think the combination of having the jobs report, which is going to be a measurement of the unemployment issue, with this need for many Americans to sort of be able, right, to make ends meet in this very challenging environment, combined with the fact that it is a political year, and nobody wants to go down in history as the Grinch that stole Christmas, right? You're going to have an environment that really has more economic headwinds that are pushing our economy forward. You will have a stimulus, and consequently, while things may be bad down the road, in the interim, things will be okay. People will have money to spend, and believe me, they'll participate in the economy. Just look at Amazon, right? The recent quarterly sales numbers, we saw that people were shopping from home in pretty big ways. Just look at Apple, up 11%. And this is with not even all the stores being opened. Some of them are opened. They take your temperature, you make an appointment, and they make a sale. And we saw that as people try and transition in this new economy to at-home positions. We're going to talk some more about that because it's a huge opportunity for investors. You are listening to Trish Intel. I am Trish Regan. It's great to be here with you. We are talking about all things in the news and how they will matter to your portfolio, to your life, and to our markets. Coming up, we're getting into GDP. I'll tell you, do not believe the headlines. Do not believe the mainstream media. If you're a smart investor, you need the intel. I have it on how you should be interpreting our economy right now. Plus, TikTok. Why do we even have a company like TikTok as successful as it is? China's the only one that's benefiting from that. And we're going to get into the Fed, because the Fed is now thinking about changing some of its data points that it watches. How's that going to affect you? We're all over it. Don't go anywhere. More next. The worst in 70 years. That is how they framed the gross domestic product report. And they weren't entirely wrong, but I'll tell you this, they definitely were not entirely right. You're listening to Trish Intel. I am Trish Regan. We're talking about all things economics so you can make the best decisions for your investments. GDP. This is the measurement of the overall economy, right? All the things that we produce, all the services that we produce. And things had been pretty good. I mean, we were doing great all through 2018, through 2019, and right into 2020 until the you-know-what hit the you-know-what. And when you suddenly shut down an economy like we did, well, you're going to pay a price. And consequently, you saw in the first quarter GDP number that the economy really just fall off a cliff effectively in the last couple of weeks of March. And then that continued into the second quarter. And so consequently, you have an economy that's down nearly 33%, fell 9.5%. That 33% is annualized, by the way, but 9.5% from the quarter before. And investors are left saying, my goodness, you know, when is it going to end? And what I can tell you is it may already have ended. And so you should take some heart in that. I do think that the worst is now behind us. And I say that from an economic perspective. I'm not counting the health issues and additional problems that we'll have related to coronavirus, the fact that people who are in these high-risk categories are very much in jeopardy and will continue to be so. But, in terms of overall economic health of the nation, it's probably about as bad as we have seen. You now have the advantage of the coronavirus stimulus package, which I was just talking about earlier, and then you combine that with a few other things, right? You combine this with the Fed, which just can't help itself. And by the way, you know, again, Given the circumstances, the Federal Reserve is doing what it needs to do. I have some issues with the fact that it doesn't properly communicate some of this. In fact, it just over-communicates some of this. So consequently, the Fed is there no matter what. They told us they will be. That is stimulative to the economy, and that will help the markets. We're going to talk a little later about the negative effects, however, long-term of that. Meanwhile, you have a White House that is doing everything that it can from a stimulus perspective, and you have a president that has made it very clear, especially to his fellow Republicans, some of whom only wanted to give out $200 a week in stimulus related to the coronavirus problem. And he said, no. We want the full 600. So he's aligned with Democrats on that one. And he's really trying to shake the trees, so to speak, and push his party towards that. So you have a White House that's very stimulus oriented. You have a Fed that's very stimulus oriented. You have the fact that, and this is a reality and not one that I necessarily love, because again, it's not getting to the fundamentals, but where else are you going to put your money? Right? I mean, where are you going to go? If you're a foreigner anywhere around the globe, you still look to the United States of America for opportunity and for the best in terms of safety, in terms of liquidity, and in terms of opportunity. So all of these things combined really mean that the U.S. is still the ticket, so to speak. And there's other reasons. You know, there will be new opportunities in this new economy, and what better place to capture it than U.S. markets? I would encourage investors to look very hard at, for example, their tech portfolios to try and understand where the new opportunities are there. And granted, some of the bigger players are going to continue growing in this space, but there's a lot of small cap and mid cap tech companies that may have a chance to really break out in this environment because the world has changed. It just has. And I don't anticipate that we're going to go back to life as we knew it, which means there are going to be winners and there are going to be losers. And you need to position yourself so that you are banking on all of those winners. There are many more opportunities ahead. We are going through a massive and dynamic shift in our economy. And that's actually a good thing. I think that there's going to be some many positive effects related to that. Back to our economy, however, you know, the fact that it was down 33% annualized, it really is the worst of it. I want to spend a moment and just look at the good stuff that's out there. We talk about green shoots in the field of economics, where we look at these little opportunities, these little glimmers of hope out there. And right now you have the ISM index, which measures, it's Institute for Supply Management, that measures effectively manufacturing here in the States, and you're seeing that that is actually at the highest level it has been at since March of 2019. Not bad, given all that's happened. And then you have big ticket items. The spending on big ticket items is way up. Another good sign for the U.S. economy. Globally, we're looking at some more green shoots. Germany, for example, recently measured the confidence among manufacturers there in the world's, Europe's largest economy. And things are looking good there too, right? So you start to add all this up and you can't help but conclude, fortunately, at least from an economic perspective, that the worst really is behind us. This is very different, I think, than say what we saw in 2008. This was an event, and we're going to continue, you know, dealing with the effects of it, most likely, until we get an actual vaccine. So that could be another 12 months. But as investors try and figure out what's ahead, how do you position yourself, then you want to be thinking about what's happening 9 months down the road. And I guarantee you, it's going to be better than what's happening now, market-wise. Economy-wise, it will be better. And that's what you need to focus on because that's where the opportunity is. All right, coming up, we're going to get into TikTok and China, talking about another opportunity. What are the American companies that are trying to get into this business to take TikTok's place? We're all over that. And the Fed, once again, you know, proving that it just has a tendency to talk too much. I wonder, where is the romance? Can we have a little of that these days? That's next. Well, we're watching to see whether or not we do get a deal between TikTok and China. regardless of what happens with that, I think there's one thing that people should focus on, and that is the question of why do we even have a company like TikTok that's as successful as it is in the first place? I'm Trish Regan. You're listening to Trish Intel. We look at all the news that's happening all over the world to figure out what it means for you, for your life, and for your money. TikTok, very much in the news. It's a very popular program with a lot of young people. They do all kinds of, you know, video dances and that sort of thing on it. Lip syncing is very much in vogue. And they've also been able to really permeate the American culture in pretty significant ways. It's concerning because Intel professionals have said they worry TikTok is going to use, has accumulated all this data on primarily America's youth who is on this platform, and that they could use that in negative ways or to influence our country in ways that would not be desirable. Effectively, you know, in plain English, they're spying on us. They're spying on us, and that's obviously a problem. But I think this gets back at the issue of why on earth are we doing deals? Why are we allowing companies from China if we don't trust them in the first place? I mean, I think of it pretty simply in that you should be able to trust the person you are in business with. And if you can't trust that person or that country, then guess what? You really shouldn't be in business with them, right? It's that simple. And yet it gets so complicated, and it gets so complicated because you have things like quarterly earnings, right? Americans, we have a tendency to be a little bit short-sighted. Right. We're focused on what does it mean for earnings this quarter? What does it mean for the overall stock price in a given week, a given month, a given quarter, a given year? China, on the other hand, is really focused on the long haul. I mean, and you think politically as well, we have this issue in that we're focused on every 2 years, every 4 years, or every 6 years. China's saying, okay, what are we doing for the next 100 years? It's a very different approach. And fundamentally leads us, I think, into two different routes, if you would. And the route of China is that it's going for the long game and it wants to have an effect on our culture. It wants, they're not shy about this, right? I mean, Xi Jinping has made this very, very clear in his 2017 address. He told his country, look, we are going to be, effectively, I'm paraphrasing, the world's number one player. And so they're not shy about it. They know that this is what they want to do, and they're looking for ways to get there. So we ought to be thoughtful about that. We ought to be saying to ourselves, this is our opportunity now. If we don't do something now, how are we going to wake up 20 years from now and do something then? We are right now still the world's largest economy. And being the world's largest economy, we have a lot of power. Do not underestimate the role of sanctions and economic sanctions and the influence that they can have. Because you're not going to have that 20 years from now if you don't do what you need to do right now to protect your position as the world's largest economy. Now, that doesn't mean not having competition. We're all for competition. I'm a huge believer in competition because that is how we make things better and that is how we make things grow. But again, you need to be thinking about who the players are on that world stage. And China, as big as it's getting, is an economic powerhouse, is increasingly a military powerhouse. And when you fast forward that trajectory, it could be pretty alarming for us if we want to continue our lifestyle, our role in the world as we currently have it. I mean, there's a lot of responsibility with being effectively the hegemonic power of the world. And you may not like it, and it may not be always what we desire, but there are some benefits to it. And I think about those benefits right now. I mean, those dark days in March when people started to get really nervous, what did they do? They poured their money into the US dollar. It's now under a lot of fire and it's challenged compared to other currencies because people are waking up and saying, wait a second, the United States is spending like a drunken sailor and they're not going to stop. And so consequently, the dollar is under pressure. But look at U.S. Treasuries. We see people flooding still into treasuries because it's a safe vehicle. That's in part because the United States dollar is still the world's reserve currency, and thus we are viewed as a safe haven. And that's sort of in line with being that hegemonic power. And you have to accept one for the other. They go hand in hand, which brings us all the way back to China and why it is that we're even allowing companies like TikTok to get this big in the first place. Because I'll tell you, any way you slice it, in this one, China kind of wins. If the president says, okay, Microsoft, you can do your deal. I had a great conversation with the CEO, Nadella, and I think that they're going to be able to safeguard all of Americans' information, and so it's worth it. If he says that, they do the deal, and the Chinese company ByteDance walks off with tens of billions of dollars, and we still don't know what exactly has happened to all that information that they gathered on American consumers. So they benefit from that. The alternative is, you know, maybe they continue operating here. I don't think that that would happen. I don't think we're at a place where that actually would happen. And so I think that ultimately they do walk away with quite a bit of money. But I would get back to this. Why don't we have American companies doing this? I mean, maybe it's a little bit of a wake-up call. You've got Instagram now trying to get into the business with Reels. You've got another company called Byte, not to be confused with the Chinese ByteDance, but they're also trying to make a play in this space. And I say more power to them, because it's important that we keep some of these things that are relevant for our culture and that are relevant in terms of protecting our data. We need to keep them among our friends. Coming up, the Federal Reserve is thinking about changing some of how it looks at data because it's trying to get inflation in the economy. But is this really the right way to do it? We're all over it. You're listening to Trish Intel. I am Trish Regan. That story next. Make sure you get the intel. This is Trish Intel. And we've got you covered, everything you need to know on markets so that you can make the right decisions for your life and for your investment. All right, we got the Federal Reserve. Boy, they love to talk. I mean, it's kind of funny because you've got all these Fed governors that somehow love being on TV, and you've got Jerome Powell, who's continuing the press conferences by Zoom, by the way, recently. But it was a phenomenon that was kind of started under Ben Bernanke, a little bit under Greenspan, but really the press conferences were a Ben Bernanke thing, continued with Janet Yellen, and now we see them with Jay Powell, and they just love to talk. I mean, I'm always amused by the amount of time that they do give television reporters and radio reporters, some of the Fed governors. And their thinking is, and this is very much part of what Ben Bernanke's thinking was, is that you needed to give this information out to the public. Now, I, as a journalist, as a reporter, am all for information for the public. I'm a big believer in it. However, when it comes to the Federal Reserve, I think that we need to actually be thinking a little bit about, well, you know, crossing that line and in fact giving too much information to the public. It used to be, in the good old days, there were people that would spend their entire career just trying to understand what the Fed was doing next. They would read the tea leaves, so to speak. Well, now you don't need to read the tea leaves because the Fed just spills them out all over the place. Consequently, you don't have that normal relationship that you should, that yin-yang in the marketplace, that buy-sell, that natural tension that should exist. And you don't have it because the Federal Reserve is always telling us what it's going to do next. Right now, saying it's going to be there to help and to print money and to do any asset buying program it needs to do to try and prop up the economy. I mean, that's good, right? If you had thought it through, way back when, in those very dark days of March, when the market was really getting hurt, you would have thought, you know, they probably don't want another 2008 event. They don't want another Lehman Brothers on their hands. They're going to do what they need to do. And in fact, that's exactly what they did. They're doing what they need to do, but they're just telling us about it the whole time. Well, now there is word circulating that the Fed is looking for a little bit of inflation. They would like more inflation in our economy. The question, though, is, Do you really need to tell us that? Because by telling us that, you're telling us, again, you're going to leave rates low, basically, like, forever. And think about the unintended consequences of doing that. Why should I buy something today if I know I can get the same low interest rate next week or the week after or maybe even next year? So if I want to encourage economic activity and therefore a little bit of inflation, wouldn't I be better off maybe threatening to possibly raise rates in the future? I mean, even if I'm not doing it, maybe I just keep my mouth shut so that investors can look at the market and say, things are improving. Things are improving, and thus maybe the Fed will eventually raise rates. Therefore, maybe I should actually be making certain investments in infrastructure or any big ticket items now, as opposed to later. Just some food for thought. Anyway, it's great to have you here. I'm Trish Regan. You're listening to Trish Intel, and this is the show where we get to look at all the news events that are happening all over the world to figure out how they're going to make you money. How do you react as an investor to all of the news? It's great to be with you, and I'll see you again here on Trish Intel. Make sure to get the intel.